Episode 19, Get a Grip on Lighting. What are we talking about, huh? Huh? We're talking about horticultural lighting. That's right. Who came on the show? Well, Andrew Myers, the CEO of ProgroTech. Not going to give it away, but he talked about selling horticultural lighting. He talked about making horticultural lighting. He talked about what we know, what we don't. Yeah, that's right. Come on now. Andrew Myers, CEO of ProgroTech on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by our friends at Keystone Technologies. Visit KeystoneTech.com. Why would you go there? Well, figure out Sign Hero, man. Get those signs done. Let's get that energy consumption from those signs going all night. As an industry, we can lower that stuff real quick. What's the easiest way to lower it? Huh? The easiest way to lower it is to get your Sign Hero on, man. Come on, bro. Sign Hero, all you do, you cut all the wires to one side of the sign, all the wires to the other. You go line on one, you go neutral on the other, slam in that Sign Hero tube, huh? 360-degree illumination, 50% energy savings, and 50,000 hours. That sign is retrofitted. Visit KeystoneTech.com, or you can just Google Keystone Sign Hero or Sign Hero Keystone, and the site's going to come up. Also, I'm going to tell you guys, you can watch this stuff on YouTube now. The conversations are way more engaging on YouTube when you can see Greg talking, you can see me talking, you can see our guests talking. We have a full virtual studio now. You just go to getagriponlighting.com and press play on the YouTube video. Or you can go to our YouTube channel, whichever you want. Episode 19. Now, don't forget who the official sponsor is, guys. The National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Yeah, that's right. We're innovative. Got a lot of great people in that association. You can learn from them. I'm there. Greg's there. And there's a bunch of people that don't do podcasts that are way smarter than me and Greg. Yeah, bro. We go there to learn from those guys. And some of them are coming on the show in the future, so you'll get to meet some of them. And you can go to naild.org. That's nailed.org. For information on joining this association, taking LS1, LS2, LS Controls, all our great educational products. That's enough for now, though. Episode 19, Andrew Myers, Get a Grip on Lighting. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Andrew.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys having me.
Say hi to Greg Eric.
How's it going, Greg?
Good, Andrew. How are you?
So, a lot of talk about horticultural lighting, and it seems to be primarily focused around cannabis. Is that correct, Andrew? It's basically a cannabis industry?
The growth of the cannabis industry is driving the horticulture market right now. There's a lot of projects that are ongoing. There's a huge number of high-pressure sodium installations that exist both across Canada and the United States. And now that LED horticulture lighting has gotten to a point where it can compete head-to-head with HPS, and that hasn't been the case up until now. So there's a large opportunity within cannabis. However, I think moving down the road, the food production market is actually going to be the larger market. But the cannabis market is really useful for that because the profit margins are larger, research and development budgets are larger, so that we can use the cannabis industry as a proving ground for technology to take into food production at a later time.
So when was the first state legalized for medical marijuana? When did that happen?
Well, it's interesting. So we're here in Arizona. Arizona and California were the first two states to legalize medical marijuana back in 1996. Arizona's legislature blocked the implementation of that law. So Arizona didn't get their medical program until 2010. But California was the first state in 1996 to roll out a medical marijuana program. But it was a lot different than the programs you see today. It was not nearly as tightly regulated. They were really pioneering. It was a half-page piece of legislation that legalized medical marijuana in California. And just for kind of comparison's sake, you know, it was a 34-page piece of legislation that finally legalized medical marijuana in Arizona. So the policymaking has come a long way. And back then there was very little participation on the agency level within California. It was really just a recognition that they shouldn't be arresting, you know, terminally ill people for using something. It's just giving them some palliative relief. But it's moved to become a completely different world here. Really over the course of the last 6 years, you've seen policymakers get much more engaged, like on the utility company side. I mean, for our industry particularly, and that's really sped up the adoption of LED technology as well. Is, you know, getting that the rebates and the cost offsets that you know, full engagement from policymakers can provide.
The go ahead, Greg.
Are there a lot of new construction going on in the growing industry? Are there new facilities getting
huge.
Built? Okay.
Huge.
And is it all related to cannabis? Is that all related to cannabis?
I think the vast majority of horticulture new construction that's happening now is in cannabis. But like I said, I think that's a relatively short-term condition. It's just because the industry is going from zero to, you know, maturation in a very short period of time. We are seeing a fair number of warehouse-style food production facilities that are coming together as well. These vertical stacked facilities that, you know, might have 5, 6, 12 layers of high efficiency LED product that's growing, you know, things like, you know, leafy greens for salads, certain types of high value herbs like basil are being grown that way very effectively. Elon Musk's to have a indoor food production startup that was based on the East Coast. So, I mean, we're seeing the movement there. And I think what's driving that is LEDs are getting more efficient. Solar is getting more efficient. Battery technology is accelerating. But on the other side of the equation, there's never going to be any more water. And outdoor horticulture is an incredibly water-intensive process. And as we increase in population, the water shortages have gotten very intense. A lot of places that used to be very green agricultural zones with California have turned brown in recent years just because of lack of water availability. So we're seeing that the lines are getting closer together. I mean, outdoor food production is still obviously more efficient than growing it indoors, but those variables are changing very, very quickly.
And you might not know this stat, but is every new facility getting LEDs lighting from the beginning, or are some still putting in high-pressure sodium systems?
It varies by market. And the real big driver on that is two things that would be really familiar to you guys. It's cost of energy and then availability of rebates. If the payback period is short, they're tending to go with LED now. I mean, there's a belief that LED is effective from a plant growth perspective. And that was really an open question up until about a year ago. So, you know, once we get past that hurdle of them believing that the technology can actually
Are you past exist, that, Andrew? Are you past that? Are you
we
past
are.
That?
Yeah, I think that really in the last 6 months, I think that there's been an industry-wide recognition that LED technology is superior to HPS. But, you know, it's a continuing journey. But the states where there's still a high level of HPS installs happening, it's really because like Arizona, our largest utility company, APS, has zero rebate for LED available right now. So you have relatively cheap energy and no rebates. That's a tougher lift for folks. But in a market like Seattle, where the main utility company there is giving 70% rebates on purchase price, it's a lot easier for folks to adopt the technology.
I saw your fixture price online. It was $2,100. So you're telling me that in Washington, they're going to give you $1,500 to buy that light fixture?
Well, when we do commercial installs, it's not typically that expensive. I mean, when people are buying units in quantity, sure. You know, it's not $2,100 that we're selling the units at. But yeah, as long as up to a certain dollar amount per fixture, it can be up to a 70% of purchase price. And we're not getting 70% at $2,100, but at a large proportion of that, we're seeing a 70% rebate. Yeah.
Now, the horticulture lighting, that's not necessarily an energy saving sale all the time, is what I've understood it as. Is LED is actually better than high pressure sodium at growing the plants? Is that correct?
Yeah, that is true. You can't get into the discussion about energy efficiency unless the fixture is just as effective as HPS at growing plants, because if you're going to be experiencing a 10 to 15% yield decrease by switching technology, any degree of energy efficiency isn't going to make that worth it. So, I mean, there is what we're really selling right now, like the sales pitch, is you can get the same or better results that you're getting with high pressure sodium, both in terms of yield, potency, you know, cannabinoid production, and also terpene production, like smell and taste components of the product, while cutting your energy bill by about 50%. You save about 30, 35% at the wall. And then you see, you know, a similar in proportion savings on HVAC, which is also a substantial energy cost for many of these grows. I mean, nothing besides a data center is producing or using, consuming as much energy or producing as much heat as a cannabis cultivation facility is.
Do they stack the HPS lights on top of one another like they do the LED lights?
No. And that's actually a big advantage of LED, is it gives you the ability to start thinking about your grow in terms of cubic feet instead of square feet. And the two things that a lot of these facilities are restricted, number one is available amperage on property, and number two is square footage. And LED is a huge help for being able to get more canopy for growers in both of those conditions.
So how would someone, let's say you have a grower who has a specialty strain, I don't know, there's all sorts of crazy names that go along with cannabis, right? In Hindu Kush and all this sort of stuff. Say someone's growing that and they've been growing it for 15 years and they, you know, they don't want to switch because they have this great strain that everybody seems to like, and it's very popular amongst their customers and so on. How would you counsel them that that there won't be a difference in flavor, taste, potency, whatever the other criteria is? How would you counsel them?
It really has to be a show not tell situation in that type of circumstance. What we usually encourage people to do is try out the lights themselves. We have an attractive trial program where clients can pay a deposit, try the lights for, you know, 3 to 4 months, get comfortable with the technology, see that they're going to get the same results before they have to jump in with both feet and do a complete retrofit of their facility. That's a pretty typical part of our sales cycle, is letting people experience the product themselves, because no one, at least at this stage, people aren't willing to take other folks' experiences for their own. They want to try the product within their own facility, and that's really to what you're speaking about, is you have these growers that have been using the same tool for a very long time. They've gotten comfortable with it. It's a security blanket for them. And not only that, in many cases, they've convinced some investment banker type guy that they're the best grower that the world has ever seen, and that they're going to be wildly successful if they only hire them to run their facility. So asking a guy in that position to adopt a completely new technology can be difficult. So, you know, holding their hand, showing that we have a high level of expertise. We have cultivators on staff with us. We're able to provide that peer level interaction with folks. But even given that, there's no substitute for personal experience and being able to get fixtures in folks' hands and let them try it themselves.
Now, I see the term full spectrum used a lot in horticulture lighting. How can an artificial light claim to be full spectrum?
Yeah, so that was, I got that question actually at the Nailed conference. The IES guy put that question to me. That's more of a marketing term than it is a technical term. What we are referring to when we say full spectrum is really a high CRI fixture, you know, something that models the representation that you would get under sunlight generally. And that's really as opposed to what has been the spectral choice within horticulture lighting traditionally, which is the monochromatic red and blue diodes that carry the vast majority of the intensity within the light. So you see this purple quality of light, for lack of a better term, that comes out of a horticulture fixture. It's this pink purple hue of light source. And so the full spectrum lights are a light that appears white to the eyes. And as we found, it is much more effective at plant growth. There was a lot of science that said that green light, came back to that, the green light was blocked by plants, that it was not photosynthetically active. We found that's not the case. The middle part of the spectrum is really just as critical as the outer edges of the spectrum, the red and blue zones for plant growth. And it proved that empirically at similar intensity levels, at the same PPFD levels or foot candle levels, whatever measure of intensity you want to choose. We're seeing about a 20% yield increase for lights that are what we're terming full spectrum versus the monochromatic purple legacy LED.
When you say that you proved it empirically, does that mean ProGrowTech proved it empirically? And if so, would you be willing to share that data?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we started, the first prototype that we built was what we, you know, would call a purple LED. I mean, that's really where the market was when we first started building light fixtures. But that was something where a lot of the end product wasn't what growers wanted to see. What we called canopy penetration, the ability of the light to create flower production, you know, 2.5 feet down underneath the top of the plant canopy, was very limited with that purple LED. We get much better canopy penetration with full spectrum. Plant stress sets in at a much lower intensity level with the purple LED. You see things like photo bleaching on the top of plant structures and other types of plant stress responses that purple LED creates. The full spectrum LED is a much gentler light source at the same intensity. We believe that's because you're spreading the photons out across the entire visual range. So there's not, it's a balanced diet of light instead of it being, you know, all of the photons crammed into one narrow band of the spectral rate. So that's something that we determined kind of on a firsthand basis in our test facility. We had a substantial install of the purple LEDs, and now we can do, you know, side-by-side testing in the same environment using the full spectrum LEDs. And yeah, that's data that we can provide.
So can I confirm that the sun is a better source to grow than artificial light? Is that correct?
Can you believe that? Yeah, the a light source that has a much has a similar spectral curve to the sun is better than an artificial purple light source.
Sure.
Believe it or not.
So the question comes, does 8 hours of sunlight produce the same effects as 8 hours of a full spectrum artificial light?
That's a good question. So, I mean, we're getting to the point now. Current LED technology is finally, you know, the spectral tuning capability that we have and the color mixing capability that we have is we're getting to the point where we can more accurately model what the color temperature and intensity curve is throughout the course of a day. The technology didn't exist to do that until just now. So we are running those trials. The problem with doing tests on plants is that you can only collect data at the speed of the plant. We're dealing with a 13-week cycle that we have to get through before we can get data on that and then make an adjustment to the experiment and then, you know, push that forward. And even that first result is still going to be anecdotal. You know, you need to rerun the experiment time and again before you can get a solid data set. What is the truth is that any indoor light source is not going to be able to meet the peak intensity of sunlight, like at noon. You know, like in Arizona, you know, we see 2000 PPFD at noon. I mean, the most you're ever going to get on the plant is half that, you know, at maximum intensity. So instead of having this, it starts gradually, comes up to a really high intensity peak and then tails off. We're not able to fully model that because we can't hit the intensity at peak the same way that the sun can. There's something called DLI, the daylight or the daytime lighting interval, like how many photons is that plant getting throughout the entire course of the day. What it seems is that it doesn't matter if light in the first hour, the seventh hour, or the 12th hour of the cycle, it's the total amount of light that arrives on that plant during that interval is really what seems to be the big predictor of growth, which is good for us. You know, so that we're able to run it at a standard, you know, same intensity throughout the course of the day for 12 hours, get the same photon count on those plants that they would get outdoors during that time period, and see the same results.
But can you speed the process up? I'm looking at the stages of the cannabis plant, and it says the seedling stage is 2 to 3 weeks. The light cycle is 18 to 24 hours of sunlight. The vegetative is 2 to 8 weeks, 13 to 24 hours of sunlight. And the flowering stage, 6 to 8 weeks, 12 hours of sunlight. Could you advance all those stages by being indoor and putting more light on it?
We haven't been able to shorten cycle dramatically with intensity alone. There's something called the Emerson effect that you can Google around about as well, of using a particular spectra of light at 730 nanometers, so a near-infrared spectrum, flashing plants with that spectrum of light at the end of its growth cycle seems to shorten the period of time that the plant requires for rest. So you can run a 14-10 cycle instead of running a 12-12 cycle in flower. We have a couple of folks that are running trials on this right now. And they've, in the, this Emerson effect is very popular with poinsettias, of being able to put the plant to a sleep state and then wake it up when it's ready to go to market. That's how they get all those poinsettias to look beautiful when they deliver them on, you know, December 10th. We've seen folks be able to take like a week, week and a half off of a growth cycle. I need to see that repeated more before we can say that's really a viable strategy. But what we do know is being able to tune the quality and intensity of light that you're giving to a plant at certain stages of the growth cycle can produce some pretty profound, what we call photomorphogenic responses, the responses of the plant to light. In the old technology with HPS, where it's one color, you might be able to dim it, but other than that, it's basically on and off. All of those possibilities are foreclosed. You know, you don't have any chance to be able to experiment with that type of technology. We're learning every week about how the ability to tune spectra can give you different results. But we really don't have a reliable way of shortening the cycle beyond, you know, the standard 8 to 9 week flowering cycle yet. Although I think as we move forward, that those techniques are going to emerge.
So what's your, how old is the oldest fixture you've deployed in the field? That's of the new style.
Yeah, of our current model, the oldest one is 17 months old in the field, being used full time.
And what have you guys calculated the lumen maintenance on these fixtures, the L70 number? And how would that
affect them? Yeah, so we have. This is actually goes to the way that we built the fixture. So we use about 2,500 individual diodes on our 4x4 fixture. They're 1-watt LEDs. So we're pushing them at about 25 to 30% of their total output. So they're, you know, the LM80 on our diodes is 50,000 hours run at maximum milliamp. Like I said, we're running about 25 to 30%. So we think that we're going to see a longer lifetime on that. I would expect to see, you know, 85 to 90% of fixture output 10 years in, given the chipset that we're using and the way that we're driving them, which is going to be well past the useful life of the fixture from the technology standpoint. My expectation is that, you know, 5 to 6 years in, most cultivators would probably want to take advantage of the next generation of technology that would have emerged. But I think the fixtures are going to last longer than he's going to be reasonable.
Just repeat that last point. These fixtures are going to last longer than what? You cut out a little bit there.
Yeah, I think that the lumen output is going to maintain itself for longer than most people are going to want to hold on to the fixtures. I think most commercial cultivators that we're dealing with are going to want a technology upgrade, an efficiency upgrade. I mean, we all know how fast the efficiencies on LEDs is improving year over year. I think you're going to see a situation where people are going to want to trade those lights in to get an upgraded model, which is part of the reason why we designed our fixture in a modular design that allows us to, you know, reclaim those, all of our aluminum framing components, our aluminum extrusions can be mounted with fresh PCBs and fresh electronics and then redeployed so that we can minimize the cost of doing that technology upgrade for our clients.
Well, I thought you were going to say that was the fundamental part of our sales strategy that we pitched to the investment banker. No, I'm just joking with you, Andrew.
Planned obsolescence.
Okay. Yeah. No, but it comes down to this kind of question with this. Like, is it time to jump in? That's kind of, if I'm sitting with a guy and he's got a big factory and he's got, I don't know, whatever, 400,000 watt HPSs in the place or whatever it is. He's going to say, you know what, it's, 17 months is not that long. And, you know, this sort of thing. Is it time to jump in like yet? I know you're the president of the company, but okay, I get the new build. Okay. If you're building from scratch, you got all this cubic square feet. Why not quadruple it or whatever you're going to do by stacking these things? And you don't need a building with such a high ceiling. You can do, produce more in a smaller space. If you're retrofitting this, which would be largely the market that Greg and I would serve, Is this ready to be pulling out HPSs and putting in these systems?
As far as whether it's ready, if this technology is ready for prime time, from a retrofit standpoint, really depends on individual circumstances. If there is a strong energy rebate available in your area, I think it's absolutely the right time. I mean, even without a rebate, the payback period on these fixtures is only about 2 years. You start bringing the rebate in, they pay for themselves very quickly. And besides the dollars and cents component, there is a usefulness to these fixtures from a practical and production standpoint. The yields are going up, the potency is going up, and it really gives you the ability to train your plants in a way that you weren't able to before, particularly in early stage development. And giving plants a cooler temperature of light gets them to sit down and focus on root and stem development, have tighter internodal spacing. So you can take plants that are very difficult to grow indoors at a reasonable mature plant height, like a really, getting a little bit in the weeds here, but a really stretchy sativa variety or high CBD strains that have a very large, they're kind of stretchy, feminine, hempy plants. They have a difficult time holding up under their weight of flower structure as you get later in the cycle. Being able to train those plants with a cooler quality of light early in the development cycle completes the plant morphology. You have a stronger, more robust plant structure. It's able to hold more flower weight later on. And we've seen, there's a particular variety called ACDC that's a high CBD strain, very difficult to grow, but produces great medicine, particularly for people with seizure disorders. And we've seen yield increases that are 60 to 80% on this ACDC strain because we were able to change the color temperature of the light and be able to generate a more robust mature plant.
You know, it's interesting because and Greg, maybe you can answer this question more. The more the longer I come into this LED revolution, the more it seems the talk of lighting becomes less about an accessory and more, even with the health effects of lighting now we're seeing, Andrew, where lighting seems to be more of a dynamic part of the environment. And so people that, looking to sell these types of lighting systems, say for horticulture, for the health effects and all that, really have to understand how a lighting system is going to contribute to that environment, whether it's growing plants or whether it's, tunability and helping with circadian photobiology or all this sort of stuff. Greg, how the hell are we going to do this, buddy? This is a Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, man. Come on.
That's the reason for this podcast, is to figure this all out, right? Yeah, all of our guests kind of hints at this, and it's what's the next big phase in lighting. And I think that's kind of where it's at, is changing from all energy savings to more part of the environment and like what you stated.
You know what's interesting, Andrew, and maybe you can just comment on this. This is more of a question. So aside from a few applications where you're using black light, say, to cure, some sort of plastics or something that's glazing, they use black light on it or whatever. This is the first, horticulture is the first application where lighting is really a part of the manufacturing process. And I think that's what makes most lighting guys nervous about it, is that, hey, if in the past you go into someone's factory, you throw up some LED high bays, 50% energy savings, so on and so forth. Hey, I can see better. There's more light. Everyone's happy, right? With this, it's like you have to be on top of that sale. You have to stage it in, especially in a retrofit, where how much percentage of your square footage are you going to dedicate to lighting? I don't know if this is a lighting sale or if there's a larger engineering or agricultural sale going on with this. Is this for lighting guys, Andrew?
Yeah, I think that's actually a really important point, is that, typically lighting is incidental to whatever the...
Great word. Main, that's a great word.
Incidental, is a great main word. Business that's happening there within the facility. But in this case, it's really, this is the main tool for them to do their job. It's like, the equivalent of, knives and appliances for a chef. I mean, this is their primary tool. And that's why you have the sale is more difficult. I mean, there's a lot more questions that are going to be asked of you. The technical grounding required to be able to successfully complete a sale in this niche, I think, is a lot different than it is within the commercial industrial space. But it can be learned. You know, I mean, it's not, the lighting science is still really the same. It's just with an extra layer of, you know, how does this light interact with the plant? But it would be really be a shame, I think, for the lighting industry to decide this was just, you know, too much effort to be able to engage it, because, I mean, the LED horticulture market alone is, you know, projected to be a $1.8 billion market by 2025 annually. That's pretty substantial. A lot of that obviously comes into the food production side of it. That's an international number. A lot of that exists in Asia. But this is not going away anytime soon. I think that, you know, horticulture lighting is something that's going to be a part of our day-to-day moving forward. I mean, especially as weather and climate patterns get more and more unpredictable, the ability to have a reliable, consistent, disaster-proof food production methodology is something that's going to become very important to people. And you know, going along with the other trends that I was discussing earlier of, you know, solar production getting more efficient, LEDs getting more efficient, and water becoming more and more difficult to come by for horticulture. This is a market that's only going to grow in the coming years. And it takes a little bit of education, but it's something that, you know, I was able to learn it. And if I'm able to learn it, I'm sure others can as well.
Yeah, don't try that, Andrew, on me. We know you're a smart guy. So I think the education, though, at this point, like, Greg, you're an LC, correct me if I'm wrong. The IES, who we just had the director of education on the show in the last episode of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. And, you know, he had nothing to say about horticultural lighting. Greg, is there anything coming out from the IES with respect to this? We should have asked Butters this, but I don't know if they're prepared to really tackle it yet. Like, I feel like the lighting industry is looking at this and going, I don't know. I don't know how to do it. And there's like these niche companies where they're really, you know, I mean, you were telling us you get your average PO size, if you don't mind me saying, was $1.3 million or something at the convention.
Like, that's massive. No. That was a typical deal. But I mean, the average one is several hundred thousand dollars. I mean,
like, these are big sales. These are big sales. I mean, it's when you said that, like, when I talked to your guy, Dave Inman, I was like, I don't know if I want to get involved in this thing. But when you come out and say, hey, you know, we just got a PO in for $1.3 million. Wow, that's a lot of scratch, man. And if you can sell, like, you can sell four or five of those deals a year, if they're not what 500,000 or whatever it is, that's a lot of light fixtures. Mm-hmm. And if you can help these guys, if you can help these growers by even if the margins are lower, but if you introduce them to the product and are helping them with the education, I think there's some sales there for lighting people. I just a little bit concerned about advising, a little bit concerned about you know, yield, talking about yield with them. And is there any formal education programs out there right now that you know of?
They're being developed. You know, I think that you have, you know, DLC is bringing forward a horticultural lighting designation here coming up soon. You see the thought leaders within the industry are kind of moving toward it right now. And this is something I said during my presentation at Nailed. I think in the meantime, it's for folks that are on the, you know, on the distribution side of things, you really need to rely on and build strong relationships with the technical folks with your manufacturer. And I know, you know, speaking as a company in the space, we are more than happy to get on a call with a client if you're like, hey, this guy's going to ask me a bunch of really highly technical questions. I don't want to sound like an idiot. You know, I really want to make this sale. Will you jump on this call with me? You know, we'll be there with bells on. We're happy to do that. And you know, there is this hand-holding period that's underway right now, but it's important to remember, I think, that in the HPS game, people aren't asking all these technical questions because it's an established technology. People are like, can you get me Gavita lights? I want to buy Gavita because Gavita is the best. Well, why do you think Gavita is the best? It's like, well, because my buddy told me that Gavita was the best and all the magazines say that Gavita is the best. Like, there's a brand loyalty that's very strong for folks within the HPS realm. And pretty much no one buys anything but Gavita and PL within the HPS area. There's a couple of other smaller manufacturers, but they have the lion's share of the market. I think that is going to be the case as we move forward with LED as well. It's going to become demystified. There's going to be a consolidation within the market around a certain type of technology because certain things work better than others, and people are going to come to that realization. I also think that you will see a move from the large companies within the space. You know, your Acuity brands, companies like that, may make acquisition plays to try to bring in, you know, well-established horticultural lighting companies and try to acquire those wholesale, full stop, to, you know, be able to take advantage of that brand loyalty that's kind of getting created right now within the horticultural market. So it's really difficult today. I think it's going to get easier. I think the science is going to get more disseminated. I think there is still a period right now of people trying to decide what's what. Leading manufacturers, for instance, are still using that, or I wouldn't call it leading manufacturers, a number of manufacturers are still using that purple-hued light spectra for horticulture. So, I mean, this is not a settled issue of science necessarily right now across the industry. We know it for sure because we've experienced it firsthand and done our own trials. But they're, you know, stay tuned. You know, I think over the next few years, there's going to be a lot of talk about horticultural lighting. I think the market is going to lead the way on that, especially this new LED boom. I think 2018 is really going to be the year of a sea change within horticultural lighting, moving from, HIDD. And that's going to drive a lot more of the educational component. Like I just, my previous conference call before I got on with you guys was with two nonprofit groups that are working to educate the utility companies and other stakeholders within the lighting industry about the advantages of LED and energy efficiency and how to best set up rebate programs and things like that. So it's all happening. But you know, it's a new industry. It's a new market and it takes some time.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm a little bit, one of the questions I want to ask you is, you know, how would you go about finding these companies? Cause I'm sure they don't advertise where they grow their product that often. How is there like a listing? How do you go about finding them? I'm sure there's a ton in Ontario for sure.
There are. So there are lists. They do exist. The Marijuana Business Daily is probably the largest trade magazine within the industry. They have a list that you can buy for like $800. But I'll be honest with you, those lists are of marginal to minimal utility, because these guys are getting solicited for everything all the time. People think that they print money and are really interested in selling products to them. What we found is the best way to contact them. Number one, we came to the table with a great asset in our own Rolodexes. I've been in the industry for, going on 9 years now. I can't believe it's been that long. But we have our own kind of networks that we've tapped into. But something that everybody can do is the trade shows. The larger trade shows, the growers are there. They're there to see the new technology. They're there to talk to serious companies. And the return on investment that we make on trade shows is absolutely massive. And if you've got a great product, that's a great way to be able to get in front of people. But just, you know, cold calling a purchased list, you're probably going to get, you know, a little bit of traction that way, but the response rates are going to be pretty low.
Well, I mean, I think there's some education that has to come first as well. Greg, you have anything else for Andrew?
Not at this point, no. I think it was a good overview and something to be aware of for sure.
Andrew, thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for your time, guys, and I appreciate you being patient with me.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks a lot, Andrew.
All right. Have a great day, guys. Bye-bye.
Keystone Technologies, man. KeystoneTech.com. Come on, man. Are you a distributor? Do you sell light bulbs to end users? Hey, you looking for a partner that's going to cover the warranty? Whose number one fundamental premise is to serve the customer being you, the distributor? Go to KeystoneTech.com. Light made easy, man. Why do I know this? Because I deal with them. Why does Greg deal with them all the time? Because light made easy. Samples. Go to KeystoneTech.com. Google Sign Hero Keystone. Google Keystone Lighting Technologies. You'll find their website. Great company. Good family business. We support Keystone. Thank you for supporting this show. Thank you to Andrew Myers, who came on to talk about horticultural lighting. What a space. I mean, this is going to be a wild cowboy crazy time on the horticultural lighting side. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with that stuff, but you know what? Andrew talked about what we learned, what we're learning. It's going to be interesting to see where we go with our food production long term. Everyone talks cannabis, but I really think this is long term about our food supply, which is way more important. And this is the official podcast of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Do you sell light bulbs every day, brother? Come on, man. You're out there humping light bulbs. You're out there trying to get people to buy stuff. You're doing stuff. The end user, come on, man. The club you need to join is our club, Greg and Mike's Club, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, NAILD.org, nail.org. Go there. You can figure out a whole bunch of educational stuff. We got LS1, which teaches you about the existing lighting environment. We got LS2, which is a course to prepare you for the LC exam. And we got LS controls. LSC, that's right. Figure out those lighting controls. Come on, man. Get a grip. So we thank you for listening this far to episode 19 with Andrew Myers on more horticultural lighting. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.